hour number two of After Hours here on 96.5 The Fan. And let me go ahead and kick off hour number two with a correction. That's always fun. Technically speaking, Arrowhead and Kauffman have a Kansas City, Missouri address. How? I don't know. It's closer to Raytown than it is Kansas City, but it somehow has a Kansas City address. So I guess Kansas City, Missouri does fund it to some extent. But if you're driving from the complex and you're driving to either Raytown or Kansas City, you're probably going to hit Raytown way sooner than you would Kansas City. Regardless, I will go ahead and correct myself, but I think the point still stands that if they move to Kansas, it's still Kansas City. As long as they're in the metro, they're still Kansas City. There's so many professional sports teams that have moved outside of their namesake city that it's become somewhat of a norm. And if the options are that or they leave entirely, I'd rather go to Kansas. Go play in Overland Park or Leawood or Lenexa. I don't care. Just stay here. Stay within an hour of where anybody can go watch you, man. That's all I care about. That's all I care about. Just stay here. I don't need to watch the Royals in 10 years playing in Nashville or Salt Lake City or San Antonio or Jacksonville or some other place. That's about the last thing that Royals fans and Chiefs fans and Kansas City sports fans in general need.
And I would agree. I think the city feels that way, right? I mean, no one really wants to see them leave. They want the best thing for their city too, but they don't want to see them go to Nashville. They just don't want to see that.
It would be awful. It would be heartbreaking. I would feel probably how basketball fans felt, like diehard basketball fans in the city felt when the Kings went to Sacramento. Or when the A's initially left Kansas City and went to Oakland back in the late 60s. Nobody wants to go through that. No, not, especially when you're a city and a metro that has, you know, 1.5, 2 million people in and around the greater Kansas City metro area, that you only have two professional sports. I guess you have four professional sports teams because you've got the Current, you've got Sporting Kansas City, and you've got the Chiefs and the Royals. But of the major North American and United States sports that are popular, football, basketball, baseball, and you become an organization, you become a city in a metropolitan area that has one, and that's it, right? You're looked upon, like, how does San Antonio only have one professional sports team? I don't want to see Kansas City become that at all. But, you know, talking about the off the field stuff and where the Chiefs and Royals might play in 5-6 years down the line, I want to talk about what's happening right now, because the Royals off today, got a series against Detroit tomorrow. I think that changes are going to have to be made with this Royals team. I'm not saying like I'm hitting the panic button here. They're still above 500. I think they're still a playoff team, but the American League as a whole is much more wide open than I had anticipated coming into the year. The Baltimore Orioles have taken 25 steps back, not one, not two. They can't score runs. They can't pitch. They can't stop anybody. They don't pitch well. They don't defend well. They don't hit well. They have regressed to such a level that I did not expect it coming into the year. I mean, we did a show on this program. We did an After Hours. Myself and Quentin Morris, a producer, he now does the midday show over on KMBZ. And we kind of went through and made predictions for the season. I had the Baltimore Orioles winning the American League. I had them going to the World Series. And now they're worse than the White Sox. What world are we living? This team won 90 games in back-to-back years. And now they're the second worst team in baseball? Didn't see that coming. Adley Rutschman has fallen off a cliff. Gunnar Henderson has fallen off a cliff. For all those people that tried to make comparisons between him and Bobby Witt Jr., I hope the pie in the face is at least cool, because you look foolish. They let some of their starting pitching walk during the offseason. They tried to replace it. It hasn't worked. You let Anthony Santander leave and go to Toronto, which has really, I think, caused some upheaval in the lineup. although Santander hasn't had a great year in Toronto either. So the American League is a lot more open than it was, I think, at the beginning of the year. The Yankees are playing good baseball, mostly because Aaron Judge is hovering around 400 and playing superhuman. Can he hit near 400 forever? I doubt it. There might be some regression there. You've already lost Gerrit Cole for the year. Giancarlo Stanton, will he ever be healthy and come back this season? I don't know, right? The Detroit Tigers look phenomenal, but I'm not ready to buy into the Detroit Tigers being a 95 to 100 win baseball team just yet. I think they're very, very good, but I think they're also very, very beatable in a lot of respects. So this Royals team has an opportunity that I don't think existed when we came into this year in late March, early April. So something's got to give. And I think one of those things, Noah Cameron has to be your number five starter at this point. He has to be. Michael Lorenzen hasn't been bad. He hasn't been great, but he hasn't been bad. Noah Cameron is doing things that people haven't seen in 40 years. I saw a stat yesterday that Noah Cameron has become the second player ever in the modern era of baseball to throw at least six innings and give up one or fewer earned runs in each of their first four starts to begin a career. One of only two guys ever. And the first guy did it was Fernando Mania, a pitcher for the Dodgers back in the early 80s. So it's been 40 years since the first guy ever did it. And now he becomes the second. He's such a phenomenal story, too, like being a guy from St. Joe, you know, I grew up an hour from Kansas City, and like that's such an intriguing and fascinating story. And all he's done is be lights out every time he touches the mound. And he threw six no-hit innings the first time he touched the mound in the majors. And in the three starts since then, he's been just as good. So I don't see how you can send him back to Omaha ever again. Like at this point, if that guy ends up in Omaha, it should be for a rehab assignment. There's no way he should go back to being an every 5 days starter and part of the rotation for the Storm Chasers. There's just no way. He's too good a player at this point.
Well, and it's such a good problem for the Royals to have, because it's not even so much that Michael Lorenzen and obviously Chris Bubich to a greater extent have been bad. They have been, you know, serviceable. In the case of Bubich, he's been really good. But yeah, Cameron has just been so good. He's forcing his way onto the team.
Yeah, I mean, Lorenzen, last year when the Royals acquired him from the Rangers, he started seven games and had a 1.57 ERA. He went 2-0, and he was really, really good. But this year, right, he's 3-6. He's got a 4.33 ERA. A 4.33 isn't horrible, but an ERA north of four is definitely not, hey, that's the guy we want on the mound every fifth day, when you've got a guy in Noah Cameron who's got an ERA under one through four starts. Is it sustainable over the course of 162 games? Hell no. Nobody's that delusional. But good Lord, he's earned the opportunity at this point. The question becomes, what happens with Michael Lorenzen? He's 33 years old, right? He's been a fairly decent pitcher, you know, throughout his career. He's got an overall record of 50-50 with a 4.02 ERA. So he's, you know, that's a pretty average career for a starting pitcher. I don't know what the market for a guy like Michael Lorenzen is, but you could try to trade him. I think he's too good a player. He's been too good a player throughout his career to be a guy you consider DFAing at this point, right? Like Hunter Renfroe, that's a DFA. I'm sorry. That's a designate that man for assignment at that point, right? Nelson Velasquez, who showed flashes but could never quite put it all together, that's a DFA candidate. I don't think Michael Lorenzen's in the same category. So the third option would be that you put him in the bullpen. But this bullpen is loaded for bear. It makes no sense to put Lorenzen in the bullpen. Not when you've got Daniel Lynch pitching really, really well. Steven Cruz has been a revelation. Taylor Clark has been really good. Urcig and Estevez and John Schreiber. Hunter Harvey, hopefully, somewhere down the line, will be done with a rehab assignment and he'll come back to the major league club. You've already got, there's too many mouths to feed in that bullpen as it is. I think that your only two options with Lorenzen is DFA or trade, because Noah Cameron has to be your number five starter right now. He has to be. He's earned it.
He has. And Lorenzen, to your point, he does have experience in the bullpen, right? So you can put him there. You make a great point. They don't really have room for him, but at least maybe that could be value to another team because he can pitch as a reliever.
Yeah, he spent, you know, the bulk of his time with the Cincinnati Reds as a relief pitcher. In fact, in 2019, he pitched in 73 games as a reliever. He pitched in 45 games the year before that in 18. 2017, he pitched in 70 games. So he has relief pitching experience. Maybe this is like the opposite of Seth Lugo. Like, Lugo started his career as a starter, and then he became a reliever, and now he's a starter again in Kansas City. Lorenzen started his career as a reliever and then became a starter, and now if he wants to stay in Kansas City, he might have to become a relief pitcher because it has to be Noah Cameron. It just has to be. That brings me to my second Kansas City Royals pitching situation, scenario, hypothetical, I guess you could call it. I thought about this the other day. I was, you know, having a conversation with some friends and family. Royals, let me paint the picture for you. Let me put the scenario in place. Royals are in the ALDS against the Detroit Tigers, for example, right? It's the Tigers or it's the Mariners or the Yankees, whoever. Game one, Cole Reagan's on the bump. He gets the start. Seth Lugo gets the start game two. And I'm going to pose this question. I have my answer. I'm going to pose this question to Jason, and I'm going to pose it to you, the listeners. Our text line number, 913-586-7965. Game three, ALDS, who gets the ball? Is it Michael Wacha or is it Chris Bubich? Last year, and at the if you would have asked somebody this question on opening day, everybody would have said Michael Wacha. Because he was the number three guy last year, right? He overtook Brady Singer, and Singer didn't start in that series. So if you looked at it in April and you're like, it's Michael Wacha. Well, now let's take a step back and let's look at this in late May as we approach the month of June. We are fully 2 months into the Major League Baseball season. Who are you giving the ball to? Wacha, who has the playoff experience? Right, he's a veteran guy. He knows what it takes to win at that level, dating back to his time in Kansas City last year and his time in St. Louis before that. Or do you give it to Chris Bubich, who doesn't have playoff experience but has been the best pitcher on this Royals staff by a wide margin? And that's an incredible statement to make considering how good this Royals starting pitching rotation has been.
So I think the X factor with Chris Bubich is he going to be on an innings limit this year, right? Because you're still talking about a guy that was coming back from injury last year. He only pitched part of the year last year out of the bullpen. This is his first year in the rotation. So you get to about August and September, if he's approaching that 180 inning mark, you know, have the Royals load managed his innings, or are they going to just say, hey, swing away and let's just go for it? That's why I would probably lean towards Wacha, just because of his experience. But I think it's going to come down to who's healthy and who's there to take it at that point for me.
So far, the text line is pretty unanimous for Chris Bubich. I would also agree, like, if the series was taking place now, right, I'm taking Chris Bubich. If the series is in September, October, okay, I may have to change my tone a little bit, right? That's a different conversation that we're having, because Bubich, so far, through 10 starts this year, has been superhuman. He is unbelievable so far this year. He's 5-2 across 11 starts. He's got a 1.01 whip. He's got a 1.45 ERA. He's struck out 70 batters across 68 and a third innings. He has pitched at least five innings in every single start he's made this year. Every single one. He has put himself in a position to get a decision. He has given up more than three earned runs once And that was four against the Houston Astros on April 27th. He gave up three runs against the Yankees, and that's the second most earned runs of his season thus far. He has pitched shutouts in one, two, three, four, five of his 11 starts this year. Nearly 50% of his starts this year have ended with him throwing at least six shutout innings. That's unreal. Is it sustainable over the next 20 starts? I don't know. I hope, but it doesn't seem incredibly likely. If it does, though, yeah, without question, if it does, first of all, Chris Bubich might be the AL Cy Young winner. Secondly, obviously he's the guy you give the ball to game three. Hell, there might be conversation about giving him the ball game two instead of Lugo. Speaking of Seth Lugo, I got an intriguing little article here from Kings of Kauffman. Mike Gillespie suggesting a trio of players that the Royals could consider trading away for a bat near the deadline to try to pick up some of this lackluster offensive production. And I'll give you a hint. All three of these guys that he mentions are on the Royals major league roster right now. We'll talk about that next right here on After Hours. Our number, 913-586-7965. Logan Weber alongside Jason High, your home for Kansas City sports.
You're listening to After Hours, brought to you by Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, scenic views on your home for Kansas City sports. 96.5, The Fan.
Having an
We'll talk about this article from Kings of Kauffman here in a second, but I just saw a tweet that made me sick at this point. So we're talking about Royals pitching, and I'm of the opinion that Noah Cameron should be the Royals' number five starter, and you figure out what to do with Lorenzen. You trade him, move him to the pen, DFA him, I don't know. I just saw this tweet about a former Royals pitcher, Brad Keller. Does everybody remember the name Brad Keller? Came up to the Royals in 2018 and kind of took the organization by storm a little bit. He went 9-6 his first year. He had a 3.08 ERA. He started 20 games. He was really, really impressive. He regressed in his second year. His third year, he had a 2.47 ERA in that COVID-shortened year in 2020 across nine starts. And then things took a turn. He had a 5.39 ERA, a 5.09 ERA, and a 4.57 ERA in back-to-back-to-back years from 2021 to 2023. So the Royals let him go. He goes to the White Sox, where he struggles yet again. And then he goes to the Red Sox, where he struggles even worse. He had a 5.44 ERA last year across 16 games, two of them starts. He's 29 years old now. He's in his first year with the Chicago Cubs. And so far this year, in 25 games, including one start, 27 and a third innings pitched, he has a 2.30 ERA. 28 strikeouts across 27 and a third. He has not given up an earned run in his last 13 appearances. And in the tweet I saw, he's throwing 100 miles an hour. Where did that come from, Brad? Where was that in your early to mid-20s in Kansas City? Where was that triple-digit fastball? The hell? You just go to Chicago and all of a sudden you can throw triple digits?
Well, it looks like he's in the bullpen now, so that might have something to do with that velocity jump, but I would not have thought triple digits with Brad Keller. Good for him.
He is heaving it for the Chicago Cubs so far this year at Wrigley Field. Yeah, he's 1-0. He's got a 2.30 earned run average. Pretty damn good. 21 hits allowed in 27 and a third. He's given up seven earned runs. No home runs, only eight walks to 28 strikeouts. Pretty damn good. He's holding a Ks per nine right now at 9.2. His previous career high was last year with a 7, or excuse me, I should say, take that back. That 2021 season with the Royals, he had an 8.1. Good for Brad Keller. But that's not the Royals pitching that I want to talk about. I want to talk about this article from the Kings of Kauffman. Mike Gillespie wrote an article, says three bold names the Kansas City Royals could move at the trade deadline to bolster their struggling offense. And these are three very intriguing names. The first that he trots out, and the headline for this part of the article says, "Will the Kansas City Royals trade from a starter surplus and part ways with Seth Lugo?" And before you say absolutely not, he does bring about some interesting points here. He does throw out some things that you don't necessarily think about on the surface. First things first, yeah, this Royals starting pitching rotation is uber talented right now. So good that, you know, a guy like Michael Lorenzen, who has been a longtime veteran in this league, is being ushered out by a rookie from St. Joe, Missouri, who is just absolutely blowing people away right now. So you have, and it's not a bad thing, you have an overwhelming surplus of pitching. You know, Daniel Lynch has been so good out of the bullpen this year that, you know, hey, maybe you look at giving him another opportunity as a starter. I doubt it, but who knows? Lugo is going to be a hot commodity in terms of a trade target, right? He's been so good the last couple of years. He was the runner-up for the Cy Young a year ago. He's got an ERA just over 3 so far this year. I think that the most intriguing part of the possibility of trading Seth Lugo is that the Royals signed him 2 years ago to a 2-year deal with a third-year player option. So if you were to hold on to Lugo, there is the possibility that he takes that $15 million player option for next year and he elects to stay in Kansas City. But as good as he was last year and as good as he's been so far this year, there is the possibility that Lugo goes, you know what, I'm going to decline the player option and I'm going to test my luck in free agency, which could make the Royals a little bit more willing to part ways with him. On the flip side, though, you're going to have to find a trade partner that is comfortable with only a half a year guaranteed with Seth Lugo, or not even a half a year, right? Trade deadline is 100 games into the season or whatever. So you're going to be comfortable, or is this team comfortable with 10 or 12 starts out of a guy and no definitive answer one way or the other if he's coming back the following year? Right, Lugo is only getting older. He's you know, in his mid-30s already. He is a guy that has had a great deal of success as both a starter and a reliever. There's going to be a trade market for Lugo. The question becomes, how do you make it work? And I think with a guy like Seth Lugo, and I would make the same argument because I've heard people talk about possibly trading Cole Reagans, which I think is asinine, but the problem with a guy like Lugo is you honestly have to trade him to another contender, in my opinion. You have to trade him to another playoff team. You have to look at a playoff team that has a surplus of hitting, specifically outfield bats, and they're short on starting pitching. That's the only way to make it work. And if you yourself are a playoff team, having to trade with another playoff contender, that one can be hard to stomach in a lot of ways, right? You're looking at, okay, you know, Detroit has Mize and Skubal, and okay, this guy's really good, but you know, they're number 3 through 5. They kind of struggle and they look like a team that could contend, right? The Yankees are certainly a team that you can look at and be like, hey, they need pitching help, a lot of it right now. So you're not going to see a team like the Miami Marlins or even the Baltimore Orioles this year. You're not going to see a team like that who's struggling trade for half a season of Seth Lugo when you're not a team that's going to make the playoffs. You're not a team that's going to be in a position, you know, maybe the Orioles, but most of these teams that you would look at in terms of trade bait, sellers at the deadline, are not going to be in a position to make the playoffs next year, more than likely. it almost appears like the trade partner has to be another contender. And are the Royals willing to give up as good of a starting pitcher as Seth Lugo is to a team that they may inevitably have to see in October? That's a tough one to swallow. So I don't know. I think it's intriguing. There are some possibilities with it. I just look at that player option for next year, and that limits the amount of teams that I think could be interested. Teams that are all in trying to win a World Series this year. And if the Royals are in a similar boat where they're trying to win now, helping another team in that respect, I don't know. I just don't see it.
And to your point, I mean, three teams that are in front of the Royals right now are in the AL Central. So it's maybe not even having to trade him to another contender in the league, but you've got three teams that you've got to deal with in your division alone. And I don't see the Royals maybe wanting to make a trade like that with one of those teams in their division that they're going to have to play.
And you look at the National League, the Philadelphia Phillies, they have a pretty good rotation. The Mets are really top heavy in their rotation. And Seth Lugo obviously has a connection with the Mets. So, you know, a homecoming of sorts, I guess, could make sense. The Cubbies, they could definitely use some pitching help, I would say. So they're a possibility. The Cardinals, as usual. But the Cardinals are in a position right now where they're playing above expectation at the moment. They're 8 games above 500 after really revamping a lot of their roster last year. Outside of Nolan Arenado, they let everybody go. For the most part, right? That Sonny Gray and Paul Goldschmidt, who's having a hell of a year with the Yankees, which I find hilarious. That's just typical Cardinals fashion, is a guy leaves and has a career year somewhere else. Goldschmidt was an MVP with the Diamondbacks before he even came to St. Louis, so maybe not to the same extent as an Alcantara or a Randy Arozarena or a Zach Gallen, but so I don't know, maybe the Cardinals, if they sort of get to a position where they're like, hey, we're 14, 15 games above 500 right now at the deadline. We're a playoff team. We can make a push. But of course, there's always the fact that the Dodgers are sitting there in the National League. And could any move that any team makes be enough to push you above the Dodgers in a 7-game series? I don't think there's a single move anybody in baseball can make that would push them above the Dodgers in a 7-game series. They're just too talented because they print money as if it wasn't illegal. The other two names that he mentions, and I'll go through these really quick because we're past due for a break. Gillespie mentions a couple of relief pitchers, specifically high leverage pitchers in Lucas Ercig and Carlos Estevez. Now, he's not saying you trade both. He's saying it kind of a one or the other sort of a situation. Right, Ercig right now, he's the eighth inning guy, and Estevez is the closer. After Ercig was the starter last year, after the Royals traded for him with the A's, last year with the A's at the deadline, they gave up three prospects, and he has been phenomenal. He was really, really good when he got to Kansas City last year. He had a 2.88 ERA in 23 appearances, and so far this year, he's got a 1.96 ERA. But for some reason, he's the eighth inning guy. And Estevez has been good as a closer. I won't argue that. But it sort of feels like you've got two closers. And I think the biggest hurdle for the Royals, if they were to make a deal and trade away an Ercig or an Estevez, would be with the fans. Because there is this illusion in the minds of Royals fans that this combination of either Schreiber or MacArthur, I would say more MacArthur so far this season, along with Ercig and Estevez, is sort of like this HDH reincarnate sort of a situation where it feels like if the Royals have the lead going into the seventh inning, it's game over. But we just talked about earlier with Michael Lorenzen and putting Noah Cameron as the number five starter, they are very, very bullpen rich right now. They have called up guys from AAA who have been astonishing this year. Taylor Clark has been good out of the bullpen since coming up from AAA. Steven Cruz has been awesome. You're going to get Hunter Harvey back at some point. You've got MacArthur. You've got Schreiber, right? And you would have either Ercig or Estevez. Would it be better to have both? Yes. But if you can give one of them to somebody in exchange for a corner outfielder who can hit for contact, more, I would say more importantly, hit for power and drive in runs, that is the more pressing need for this Royals team. Of those three names, I could definitely see one of them going at the deadline. Problem for me is, will the Royals be in a position when we get to the deadline in July of being a seller or a buyer? Because right now, they're a buyer, but they've struggled as of late. Will those struggles continue? I think you have to make something happen prior to the deadline in order to keep this team in a position to be a buyer. And I'll talk about that next. You're listening to After Hours, Logan Weber alongside Jason High on 96.5 The Fan.
You're listening to After Hours, brought to you by Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, scenic views on your home for Kansas City sports. 96.5 The Fan.
Get a $15...
Some time here tonight on After Hours talking about who the Royals could move at the deadline and, you know, what kind of a guy, what kind of bat could they go get. I have constantly said a guy like Kyle Stowers with the Miami Marlins, who has been really, really good this year on a Marlins team that is really struggling in a pretty good division. You've got the Phillies and the Mets atop that division right now. Phillies currently have the best record in the National League. The Mets are not far behind. Even the Atlanta Braves, who are currently sitting below 500, they just got Ronald Acuna Jr. back. Chris Sale's fresh off of a Cy Young Award winning season in the National League. They've got starting pitching coming back healthier. You're not going to surpass any of those three teams. Your only competition really is the Washington Nationals, and you're only competing for fourth place in that division as of now. So the Marlins could move on from a guy like Kyle Stowers, who came into professional baseball as a pretty highly touted prospect and didn't really play at or above the expectations that were set before him. But he's having a career year thus far, right? He was originally with the Baltimore Orioles organization. He was, he went over to Miami. He played in 50 games last year. He hit 186. So far this year in Miami at 27 years old, he is hitting 291. He's got 10 home runs, 32 RBIs. He's got an on-base percentage of 362. That's a guy that you can comfortably put in left or right field every day. That's a guy who hits for contact. He's got some pop in his bat. He drives in runs. He gets on base with regularity. And he's a decent enough glove. He's got 3 stolen bases this year. So, I mean, there's not a ton of juice there on the base paths, but he can move around a little bit. I would love a guy like Kyle Stowers. And if there's one thing we know about the Miami Marlins, it's that they don't keep their guys very long, right? When they have a guy who has a career year, he is inevitably on a different roster the very next season. Almost every time. Marcelo Ozuna, primary example. Christian Yelich. Giancarlo Stanton. The list goes on and on and on and on with the Miami Marlins. Dating back to when they were the Florida Marlins. This is not something new. This has been the way this organization has operated for 30 years. So that's an outfield guy, good enough glove, good enough athlete out there that you can put in a corner outfield spot, along with Isbell and Drew Waters, who are having really good years. But those guys don't drive in runs. They hit for contact, they get on base, they have great fielding ability, but they don't drive in runs. Kyle Stowers can bring some of that to you, I think. A former Royal, Ryan O'Hearn, playing for the Baltimore Orioles, who are a really bad baseball team this year. But O'Hearn is hitting 338 for some ungodly reason. He has got 9 home runs, 21 RBIs. His OBP is at 427. So that's, there's an interesting storyline there with him. I think that there could be some guy, Helio Ramos with the Giants is another. I'm looking at guys that are outfielders, right? And O'Hearn is a right fielder. I know he played first base with the Royals, but he's played quite a bit of outfield for the Orioles along with some DH. He's not an outstanding glove, but if he's going to play right field, do I care what his glove looks like? I need the guy to drive in runs. That's what I need O'Hearn to do. I need him to hit sixth in the order and drive in runs. That's his job. And I think that a guy like Ryan O'Hearn or a Kyle Stowers could certainly do that for this Royals team. But there is that guy sitting in AAA right now that everybody's talking about. When does Jack Caglione make his way to Kansas City? I have been very, very slow in my approach for him. But I'm starting to change my perspective on that quite a bit. We'll talk about that next. You're listening to After Hours here on 96.5 The Fan. Logan Weber, Jason High, your home for Kansas City sports.
You're listening to After Hours, brought to you by Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, scenic views on your home for Kansas City sports. 96.5 The Fan.
I'll come right out and say it. I don't think we're going to have to wait much longer on Jack Caglione to make his debut in Kansas City. I think some of it is because the Royals obviously have need for him. I think the bigger part of it is because Jack Caglione is forcing his way into Kansas City. He is playing so unbelievably well to begin his time in professional baseball. Right, I mean, he did his thing in Double A with Northwest Arkansas, and you're like, okay, it's time. Right, it was obviously there was no room for further growth with Jack Caglione in Double A. He gets to Triple A, and you're like, at least for me, like let's just see how he does. Right, well, he's played in 8 games now, which is a small sample size. But the man is hitting .343 with 12 hits in 35 at-bats. He's got 5 home runs and 10 RBIs. Good Lord. So the question becomes how much longer, right? Because if this is such a sensitive situation, this could go so many different ways. You could mishandle this so drastically, no matter where you go with it. If you wait too long, he might lose confidence, right? If you call him up too early and he struggles in the bigs, then you may have just irreparably damaged his confidence forever. For me, some are saying like in the next couple of weeks, we could see Jack Caglione in Kansas City. I'm not saying that's not a possibility. The one thing I would like to see at this point, he's proven he can do it in Double A. He's proven he can do it in Triple A. The one thing that he did in Double A that I haven't yet seen him do in Triple A against some slightly better competition, and this is going to sound weird on the surface, but I'll explain. I want to see him struggle a little bit. I want to see him go into a slump. Why? Because I want to see him play his way out of it. He did that in Double A, right? He starts out the year in Northwest Arkansas, and he got off to a slow start. He didn't begin the season great, but he worked his way through it, and by the time he was exiting Northwest Arkansas and going to Omaha, he was unbelievable. He gets to AAA, and he's immediately tearing the cover off the bat. He hits 5 home runs in 4 days over the weekend. He was unreal. What I want to see from Jack Caglione is a little bit of adversity hit him at a slightly higher level against slightly better competition. Because, you know, at the Double A level, that's typically where an organization's top prospects kind of live. The younger guys that they, you know, these are first and second and third round picks from a year ago, 2 years ago, 3 years ago. These are our most highly touted international prospects and those sorts of things, right? Triple A, that's typically a spot where you see guys who are imminent for the major leagues, or the tweeners, as I like to call them, guys who are not quite talented enough for the majors, but they're not nearly as developmental as the AA guys are, right? The AAA is reserved for guys that you need in a spot, right? Guys that you're like, yeah, this Noah Cameron guy is pretty good. He's too good for AA. We don't quite know if he's major league ready yet. Oh, Cole Reagans goes down and we need a guy to start a few games. Okay, come on, Noah Cameron. And then you're like, holy hell, who's this guy? That's what it kind of resorts around, right? That Nick Lofton was in Kansas, or was in AAA for a while now. John Rave, who they just recently called up in AAA for a while. So the one thing that I want to see is Jack Caglione go through a spell against some of those fringe Major League Baseball players where he struggles a bit, where he goes through a 5 or a 6 game stretch and he's 4 for 19 at the plate, or he's 6 for 21. And you're like, man, like, you know, or not even 6 for 21. He's 4 for 19. He's 5 for his last 27, those sorts of, where you're like, okay, Cags has taken a bit of a slide here. He hasn't hit the ball well here in the last week and a half. And he's able to, you know, kind of really dig deep, diagnose, okay, here's what's going wrong, and play his way out of a slump. I kind of want to see that from him at the AAA level, because it shows me that there's a pattern there where he did that in AA. He's done it now in AAA. There's confidence confidence for the organization, and confidence in himself now that he can do that because he's already done it at the previous two stops he'd been at. I want to see him go through this slump for the sake of maybe putting a little bit less pressure on himself. When you play as well as he did in AA towards the end there, and then you show up in AAA and you're hitting the cover off the baseball and you get to the big leagues, everybody on planet Earth, if they aren't already, is looking at you, or everybody in the Royals fan base is looking at you as the savior of the organization, right? Oh, we can't hit home runs and we can't score runs, and Jack Caglione's going to show up and he's going to hit 20 home runs in 100 games, and he's going to drive in 60, and he's going to hit 300, and he's going to do all these things. And I think that by going through that slump, it makes him a little bit more unflappable in a lot of respects. The expectations are maybe going to be a little bit more on this planet to a certain extent. I don't know. Maybe I'm just talking out of the side of my mouth here, but I'm just so nervous that they're going to mess him up, because he is so good. Since the Royals drafted him 6th overall, how the hell he fell to 6th, I don't think anybody will ever be able to answer that question. Mostly because it was starting pitcher heavy, for those who are unaware. The first 5 picks were very starting pitcher heavy. Ever since he arrived in Kansas City, he's felt like can't miss. And I always go back to this example because it's one that I spent a lot of time covering in my previous stop down in Springfield, Missouri, which is unfortunately Cardinals territory, was Jordan Walker, who was the number one prospect in the Cardinals system. At one point, I believe he was the number two prospect in all of baseball behind only Adley Rutschman. That's how talented a guy he was going through the minors. And the Cardinals boggled that man's development. Absolutely just ruined him. And I just don't want to see that be the case with Jack Caglione. I want to see him get to Kansas City and have every possible opportunity in front of him to be successful. That's all I want. 913-586-7965 is our number. Much more coming up, including the latest from Chiefs voluntary workouts. The first week of OTAs has now concluded, and we've got some stories coming out of camp there. We've also got, of course, the NBA playoffs. We've already got one team penciled into the NBA Finals. What's going to happen in the Eastern Conference? You've got Knicks-Pacers Game 5 going on right now. We'll talk about that. along with a couple of other national stories, including a 16-team format for the college football playoff gaining even more traction. And speaking of college football, the College Football 26 trailer dropped today, courtesy of EA Sports. All that's coming up in the 8 o'clock hour of After Hours. Logan Weber alongside Jason High here on 96.5 The Fan.
You're listening to After Hours, brought to you by Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, scenic views on your home for Kansas City sports. 96.5 The Fan.